It's Tuesday, June 15th. We're talking about contenders in the AFC and NFC. College football playoff is expanding, and Travis Kelce is afraid of who? I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Matt Ford. This is Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. Matt brought up the point that we have maybe the most Jewish people per capita of any podcast. I did not know this before the break. So if you are a Jewish person like myself, welcome to the show that is produced by the tribe, by members of the tribe. Matt, we've been doing this show together for a long time now. I've known you for even longer. I didn't know you were Jewish. So welcome to the tribe, I guess, or you're a part of the tribe already.
Thanks, Jeff. It's great to be here. It's great to be among friends.
I love learning about these things. All right, let's get into the first topic, which is college football, which I know we're a pro football podcast, but guess what, everyone? I cover college football full time. I also cover a lot of other sports, but you don't want to hear my takes on the College World Series. So let's go to college football.
Well, speak for yourself, Jeff. I'm pretty intrigued by that, especially if there's gambling to be done. But okay, I'm glad we're here to talk about this because I simply don't know what to do with this latest news out of the NCAA or the College Football Management Committee. It's a little unclear who's in charge over there. There's this proposal that they'll maybe expand the college playoffs from 4 teams to 12. This is all a proposal. They're going to vote on it later this week. But the main gist is the four champions of each conference will get a first round bye in a 1-4 seeded out of 12 competition thing. There's sort of lots of different variables here. This seems to screw Notre Dame, which has like a lot of Twitter up in arms. I guess my first question, Jeff, is what do you think of this and why is this a thing?
Well, what I think of it is exactly what I think everyone else thinks about. This is a money grab, plain and simple, right? It's a money grab to generate more money for college football, which in turn hopefully goes to the players, right? We know name, image, and likeness is happening very soon, but it's going to be hard to say, hey, look, you're playing 16 or 17 games and we're making billions of dollars in a playoff system and the players see $0 of that billion. It's going to be a tough sell. But the reason why they're doing this, Matt, is for that reason, right? It's for money. It's for better quality games, I think, in that market, right? We have bowl games have been, you know, their bowl games are fun, but the playoff games we've had so far, a lot of them have been blowouts, or hoping maybe we get some closer games. What we're not doing here is finding a new champion. We're not finding a new champion.
Bingo.
If you think this playoff is for finding a new champion, that is incorrect. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State are the cream of the crop. That does not change the system. I would argue, Matt, that actually makes it easier for them in this system. They get a bye now, right? They have a bye. So Alabama gets to play a team who just played the week before, who's more beat up. They play Alabama, who's fresh and rested. Alabama has less games to win to get to a title game or a championship versus another team. And it makes it easier, in my opinion, for those top teams. And there's a big discrepancy now in talent. What wins in college football is different than any other sport, in my opinion. People say, well, the Bucs with the fifth seed, they won the Super Bowl, or you know, the Tampa Bay Rays made a World Series, or whoever, blah, blah, blah. Yes, you can, as a lower seed in those other sports, you can win. But the talent discrepancy between, you know, the best baseball team and the fifth best baseball team is not the same as Alabama and even a fifth best football team. When we saw it last year with Alabama, Notre Dame, right? The talent discrepancy is so large that we're not finding a new champion. We're going to have maybe better games to get to a championship. We might have an upset here and there to get to a championship. We're not finding a new champion in the system. And I argue that a lot of things that people think this is going to help aren't really going to help. I'll give you an example. I'm a Pac-12 guy. I went to Oregon. I cover Pac-12 for a living, Pac-12 radio. Good for the Pac-12 conference. We get a playoff team in at least one every year, even though last year, ironically enough, we wouldn't have because of the weird way it went with COVID. We get someone in the playoff. How great is this for our conference? Well, it's only great if we win the freaking playoff game. Like, if we go to the playoff, bravo, everyone else goes to the playoff, right? It's not as exclusive now as it was with four teams. Now we have to win the playoff game to get the recruits to come. People say, well, that's going to help recruiting exposure. Guys, exposure is plenty now. You don't need exposure to, you don't have to go to USC to have people watch you play football, right? You can do that anywhere now. Well, if you make the playoff, players want to come win with you. No, you have to win the playoff games for players to want to come play for you. Like, if you are a top player, you are Bryce Young, who went from Southern California, he's now Alabama's quarterback in this season. He's going there to win a championship at Alabama. The reason why they passed up Oregon and USC and all those schools is not because they don't make play in a playoff. It's because they can't win a championship. So I'm not sure this makes that any easier. And I would argue, too, that now a Pac-12 school, by the way, has to win four games probably against top 10 teams to win a playoff, where in the past it was just two games, right? We saw Oregon beat Florida State, unfortunately lost to Ohio State. This is great for the group of five. Okay, fine. They're in the playoff now. But guess what? Instead of playing an Auburn team who's depressed after losing an SEC championship game, you get Oklahoma trying to win a championship in the first round. Congratulations. And I would argue, Matt, that a win against Auburn by UCF standing alone with one win against Auburn is better than a playoff win followed by being massacred by Ohio State. I feel like that stands alone as, hey, we won this one game. We can recruit off that. It's great. We feel great. It lessens if you go and lose to Ohio State by 45 afterwards. So, to be clear, I will watch the football. Me and Matt, we will bet on the football. We will enjoy the football. I'll enjoy the first round. I'll enjoy Florida having to go play Wisconsin. That'd be fantastic. I would love for Oregon to host Washington, USC, whoever out west, to host a playoff team who normally wouldn't come out west. Those are all great. But for all the reasons I said, it doesn't, I think, fundamentally change why people wanted more teams in the playoffs, which is better competition.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jeff. It feels like they're trying to address the problem, which isn't even a problem, of that one team that gets left off every year, right? Like, this is expanding it so there's no sort of fifth team that can sort of complain and say, well, we should have gotten our chance and screw the powers that be. Like, that debate that they have every single year between who's fourth, who's fifth, who's sixth, whatever, who's going to make it, who's going to get screwed, that is the only fun thing about the college football regular season anymore, is that debate. Like, you check in, you know, 6, 7, 8 weeks in, and you're like, oh, interesting, this team might actually have a chance to do it. I think one of the things that we're seeing with all these sports across the board, the NFL is potentially going to run into this problem too with the 17 and 18 game thing, is scarcity is an asset. Like, the fact that the NBA, the regular season is so diluted, it's because there's too many games, right? Like, if every single game mattered, this is why football is so fun in the regular season. Every single snap, every single game matters. For college football now to say, like, well, we're in this playoff, like, we're 1 through 12, and you're right, there's going to be 70-point wins if Alabama plays the 12th best team in the country. Like, I just don't feel like they're making this product any more special. And it's obviously a money grab, like you said, but, like, fans see through that stuff, man. Like, at some point, people are just going to want to watch good football. And, you know, your team might be on and that might matter to you. But to me, this just feels like a little bit of an overreach, and they're not leaning into the one asset they have.
I would have loved if this was, you know, a 4-team playoff or a 16 playoff or 18 playoff. Like, that, those feel like the better ways to handle the situation. Look, you'll still get a group of five team in if you go to 18 playoff. And again, to your point, right, it's not too many games. I think it's a perfect amount of games for an enjoyable series. I really do think this bye is a huge advantage for the top four teams. And you can also pencil them in. Also, too, if I'm Oregon, okay, Oregon has Ohio State this season. Who knows, does Maryland have a big non-conference game? I don't have no idea. Okay. But let's say that our favorite team, that we have Ohio State this year. I know you have Ohio State in conference, but let's say we have Ohio State in week two. In the current system, that game is really important, right?
Yeah.
Because if we lose that game, we cannot afford to lose a conference game. And then we'll be 10-2, and we'll be out of the playoff. Now that Ohio State-Oregon game in the new system, not as important. Because guess what? 10-2, exactly. We're in the playoff. And I would say that actually, I would schedule Ohio instead of Ohio State, because you have a better chance at 12-0 or 11-1 to get a bye than you do at 10-2, not getting a bye, right? I'm telling you guys, it is going to be really hard for a lot of these teams to win four straight games against the caliber of opponents they're going to play. And maybe you could argue the same thing is true about Alabama or Clemson, Ohio State, but guess what? They already win all these games, right? So again, I'm going to watch all of it. I'm going to enjoy it. But the conversation we're going to have at some point, when the numbers come out about what this is going to bid for, whether it's bidding on Fox and CBS and NBC, we've bid on all of those, ESPN, is I'm not really for paying players a salary, a stipend, for playing college sports. I think name, image, and likeness, I'm all for. I should just do it now. Sign up and get it done now. But Matt, when these numbers come out, billions of dollars, they're going to have to start paying the players, Matt. Like, you're playing 16, 17 games now. Players better see some of this money.
Yeah, Jeff, it's a lot of money to go around. It's obviously interesting timing as this conversation about unionizing and player comp comes into I don't know, the next level. We'll see where this goes, but I haven't seen one person online who's like, yes, awesome. Like, this college football format sounds amazing, which is just really bizarre. Like, this is something we all wanted 10 years ago, and now we're all just like, ugh, this feels like a gross money grab.
Well, I think people are happy for more football, but I think people realize that 12 is a lot. I mean, we went from 4. People were like, oh, let's go to 6 or 8. And it's like 12. Oh, wait. And then there's not automatic qualifiers. And I think, again, I think the money thing, you know, people are like, man, like, are the players going to see some of this money?
Yeah, I don't know. But it's going to mean a lot of, like, Conference USA getting murdered by Ohio State in a game where you and I have to bet, like, Ohio State by 30 and somehow cover it anyway.
Oh, God. It's going to be just...
It's going to be terrible, man.
But I will say the one thing I do like about this is the first round at the home site.
Yeah, that's nice, fun. I guess.
Yeah.
Just more advantage for the best teams. All right. Well, moving on back to the pro game. So... You know, we've got these two soap operas with two of the best 5 quarterbacks in the league, Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. You know, as we get closer to training camp, we're sort of seeing where these two things shake out. These two stories are kind of looped together in my mind because they're both sort of, I don't know, they both sort of have similar complaints. So there was news out of both camps this weekend. First, let's go to Seattle and Russell Wilson, who for the first time talked to the media since the end of the season. He said, I think there were some unfortunate frustrations after the season. I've always wanted to play here for my full career, obviously. Remember, he was saying he got hit too much. He wanted to get traded to only 4 teams. But meanwhile, Seahawks signed Gabe Jackson. They hired a new offensive coordinator. It seems to me that Russell Wilson kind of played this perfectly because he got what he wanted. He got some help on the offensive line. He got Seattle's attention. And now all the fans think, oh, well, Seattle just had done such a bad job protecting him all these years. What a saint Russell Wilson is. Do you feel like he kind of played this thing perfectly?
He did because he got what he wanted in the end, right? He got an upgrade offensive line. He got a new OC. Supposedly they're going up-tempo. I want to comment on that, by the way. I saw Russell Wilson talk about the up-tempo offense they're going. So I've been in many offenses where in the offseason program and training camp, and maybe week 1 or 2, it was all about up tempo, we're going fast, we're going to do it. And then like by week 4, it's back to normal tempo because attrition on offense, defenses catch up, play callers realize things are a little more complex when they're not scripted during training camp and things slow back down. So when you hear a quarterback say that, don't get caught up in the tempo thing. Everything kind of slows back down. Things get more complicated. Like I said, there's different players in and out of the lineup. It's hard to do that when you have new pieces. Now, some offenses like Peyton Manning, right? That's always what they did. And I would even argue that it wasn't so much up-tempo, just no huddle, right? They come to the line of scrimmage. They take their time. You know, to me, up-tempo feels like get to the line, snap the ball, let's go. I wouldn't expect that. But we've also hear all the time, not all the time, but recently, that Seattle is going to throw the ball more. All right, well, I believe it when I see it, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, they plucked another offensive coordinator out of the Sean McVay tree, which like has had mixed success across the league, as we've seen some of those other candidates go through things. I just think, like, look, he won the battle of public opinion. Like, for a few weeks, it was like, well, Seattle's got to trade him. Like, you've got to make Russ happy. He's one of the best players in the league. And you're right, he's been hit so much. It's like, dude... They lost to the Rams last year without Jared Goff in the playoffs. Like, Russell Wilson fell apart at the end of the season and deflected all of the blame entirely. So, like, credit to him, I guess. And you look at what's happening in Green Bay. So, this weekend, Mark Murphy called Aaron Rodgers a, quote, complicated fella and said that his trade request has divided the fan base. To me, this just looks like Russell Wilson 3 months later. Like, it's the same odyssey of trying to sort of win people over and deflect some of the blame, I think.
So Mark Murphy said this at a, you know, like a closed door Packers team club thing And this is what he said Ted Thompson talked about with regard to Aaron Rodgers. So a couple of things that strike me as pretty interesting in this. One is that I looked this up because I had to cover this on the radio. Mark Murphy is 65 years old. I think some of these dudes don't realize everyone has a cell phone. And even though it's a private meeting, what you say is going to get out. Because I think you made the argument that you should, why would he say that? Well, what's the purpose of saying that? You know, it's only going to piss off Aaron Rodgers. I just don't think Rodgers is moving. I don't see it. The more this goes on, the more leverage the Packers have, in my opinion. They, in the new CBA, it was stipulated that the team has to fine Aaron Rodgers for not showing up to training camp. It used to be in the past that you would kind of either not fine a guy or fine a guy and then rescind the fines once the player showed back up. But you can't do that anymore. Now, you can excuse it for absence, which we talked about the Packers might do for Rodgers for minicamp, but they're going to excuse absence for training camp as well. I think the Packers have Aaron Rodgers by the balls. Does Aaron Rodgers really want to retire and lose all this money? Is that what really, deep down, is that what he wants to do to prove that a point that the Packers didn't tell him Jordan Love was going to be drafted before he was drafted? Like, Matt, I just don't believe deep down that's what Rodgers. Remember, the last quarterback to do this was Carson Palmer in Cincinnati. The Bengals aren't the Packers, right? Or the Packers aren't the Bengals, either way. Like, this is a two-time NFC champion. Two-time play in the championship 2 years in a row. They got a football team. And guess what? They drafted Rodgers' replacement already. And whether we agree or disagree with whether they should have done that, I would say they shouldn't have done that, especially not trade up for him. He's there. And they drafted Rodgers' replacement. So he's not as good as Aaron Rodgers, I would imagine. He might not be good at all. But if you're the Packers front office, you're like, all right, Rodgers, see you later. We have your replacement. You know what I mean? Like, Rodgers doesn't have leverage here.
Yep. They still have Devontae Adams, and they still have Aaron Jones, and they still have Bakhtiari and all of those, you know, really good offensive line. We talked about this last week. I agree with you. I think the thing that's interesting to me out of this whole saga is, you know, we saw this. In some ways, it feels like the NBA kind of previews these things that happen in the NFL. Like, we've seen this now with stars in the NBA where they're just like, they go sort of around the team and into the media to sort of like lay out their complaints, like make known their feelings. It's really interesting watching these two franchise quarterbacks who appear to have all this leverage try to do their thing out in the media and put the pressure on the team to do something, but the team doesn't really have to. And we saw that with Russell Wilson, you know, they threw him a bone. But getting Gabe Jackson shouldn't solve everything for him, should it?
A couple of years ago, Russell Wilson said, I want new money and I'm sitting out till I get it. And like 3 weeks later, he got his money. Seattle's given in to him. Right. And again, I think the big difference here is that I think Russell Wilson likes Pete Carroll and John Schneider. Rodgers clearly doesn't like the front office in Green Bay. So there's a difference in, like, when you like someone, like working for someone, you know, you might put up with more shit than you would if you don't like the person, especially when you think you have leverage to kind of air your grievances as Aaron Rodgers has done. But I just refuse to think the Packers are trading him. And whether or not he plays, I don't know, but he ain't playing for someone else next season.
No, there's just no way. There's no way that Green Bay could throw away that roster that's so close to competing. And, you know, just because a guy got a little bit grumpy in the offseason. It's been fascinating to watch this. I have a feeling there will be a lot more stories like this moving forward for, you know, the other top quarterbacks.
Do you think so, though? Doing, like, their thing. Do you think they're going to be like this defiant as Rodgers has been? Like Russell Wilson, yeah, okay, fine. I want better offensive linemen, or I want, you know, a better coordinator, sure. I also think quarterbacks look at what the Chiefs did for Pat Mahomes this offseason. Look at what Tampa has done for Tom Brady. And they say, hey, why can't my team do that for me? And they get pissed at their front office. Other teams have gone out their way to shore up situations for their quarterbacks.
I agree. But I think that, you know, 2 years ago, we would have called Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson model citizens. And you just see how this goes. Like, these guys, I think that they're all really competitive and really aware of the legacy and all of the perception that's going on around the league. The talk of the league is Brady and Mahomes. And if you're Rodgers, who just won the MVP, and you're like, wait a second, people are talking about every other great quarterback in the league besides me. And meanwhile, they drafted Jordan Love. Like, I got to start raising hell out there. And, you know, every other sport has figured this out, how to sort of manipulate the media into telling your story. And look, it's just, it's going to happen. Look what just happened with Julio Jones. Like, everybody's playing this game and we all act like we're surprised that it works. It works every time. It's going to keep happening.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, at least it might not work every time, but players are going to continue in this player empowerment era, are going to continue to try to use their power.
Yeah. It'll be interesting too, to see if they ever start happening during the season, like it did with the NBA. Like that will be really interesting.
Like James Harden.
Yeah. If somebody just starts tanking and it's just don't give a shit.
It's so hard to do that. I think
it is
in a team sport like that, because, you know, in the NBA, if James Harden tanks, no one's health is at risk. But if I tank as a player in the NFL, I might hurt my teammates, which I don't think no one wants, right? If someone's saying, I don't want to be there, Rodgers still wants his teammates to be healthy.
Right. Yeah. And I think, I agree. I think this Aaron Rodgers thing blows over, and he won't be able to sit with like the whole of America thinking he's a total asshole for bailing on his teammates. I just think that's how it ends.
I'm going to add one more football topic at the very end of this next one. There's something came to my head. I don't know why, I just thought about it right now, but after the next topic, I want to throw one more thing in there. That is actually a pretty interesting story this week.
Okay, cool. Well, this one I found really interesting, which was Travis Kelce of the Kansas City Chiefs. This week, granted, it was at a Jarvis Landry softball game, said that the Browns are definitely a contender, without a doubt. I think the Browns and Chiefs are definitely neck and neck, which was really interesting, because usually you don't hear players talking about like, hey, these are the other teams that we're kind of looking at. But he named the Browns, which, like, by the way, amazing work, Cleveland. Here you are in the title conversation in June. Who would have thought? I'm curious what you made of him talking about this early in the offseason. And also, from a football point of view, if you actually buy that Cleveland is ready to potentially be in that list of upper tier title contenders.
It was very interesting comments. I'm glad that players continue to speak, contrary to like Le'Veon Bell saying that, people say you can't speak your mind. And no one's actually said that. Please keep talking. It's great for our business. He's from the Cleveland area, right? He's from Cleveland, I believe, is around there. So it makes sense he'd hype up his hometown team. I think he's right, though. I think if you're looking at contenders in the AFC, it's the Chiefs number one. That's tier one. They're at the top. Draw a line. Browns, Bills, draw a line, everyone else. And I'll tell you why I like the Browns. I think it's not unreasonable to say they have a better roster than the Chiefs. Look at their pass rushers.
Wow.
Look at their secondary. Look at their linebackers. Look at their offensive line. Look at their skill. The Chiefs are really good with Hill and Kelce. They don't have a number two. Mecole Hardman, Robinson, not great. Running back, right? Browns. But the big difference, obviously, is Pat Mahomes is so much better than Baker Mayfield that elevates the Chiefs kind of above the Browns. So the question becomes, is Baker Mayfield the guy? That's my opinion on this. Is Baker Mayfield the guy? If things break down, if they're not schemed up, if they're not, you know, that offense is that outside zone Shanahan offense, play action pass, get him out of the pocket, heavily schemed. I mean, Baker Mayfield's in the mold of like a Jimmy G and Jared Goff, right? Not a high trait guy, very schemed up. Are they good enough with him to beat the Chiefs? Look, week one is going to be a bad matchup for the Browns. I'm telling you right now, bad match. Andy Reid is great in week one. He's great off a bye and great in week one. I think with Mahomes, they're averaging like 38 points in three games in week one. The Browns have to break in two new corners in free agency and a third they draft against the Chiefs. Not ideal, right? So it'd be a tough go in week one. But can you go into Kansas City and score enough points to beat them, right? Can you slow them down just enough defensively and they add the corners to do so to get, you know, get enough stops, turn sevens into threes and turn threes into punts? They can do it, I think. But Baker Mayfield's a question. And going a little step further, Matt, the Browns are going to be in the same spot, I think, that the Rams and Niners have been with quarterback, right? They're going to pay Baker Mayfield. He's going to play well this year. And they're going to be a situation where a couple years from now, they're going to be like, I mean, look at the NFL right now. This is not a slight to Baker Mayfield. Look at the top quarterbacks in the NFL. Throw Brady out of it. He's old, and I'm not even sure he's even like a top five or seven quarterback anymore. They're all high physical trait guys, right? Big bodies, big arms, very mobile. Is that what Baker Mayfield was, Matt?
No. He's crafty, but no, not quite.
No. And so that's why I think they're contenders, but probably it's just small. Yeah, I will say though, the Chiefs getting four straight Super Bowls, well, four straight AFC Championship games, three straight Super Bowls, be pretty impressive. Like, if someone's going to knock them off, it might be just injuries. I can't see a healthy Chiefs offensive line and a healthy Pat Mahomes losing at home in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I think you're right. If it would be underrated of a dynastic run for the Chiefs if they're able to get back to the Super Bowl again this year, given how hard that is every single year. I agree. It seems like, you know, you talked about the Chiefs going and getting a bunch of offensive linemen. You mentioned the Browns acquisitions in the secondary. It seemed like they sort of looked at that playoff game last year, the divisional round against the Chiefs, and they were sort of like, hey, you know, we could have had these guys, and they really could have. Like, Chad Henne pulled a rabbit out of the hat at the end of the game. Mahomes didn't have an amazing day. He was 21 of 30 for 255. They just kind of, you know, they gave up a lot of big ones to Tyreek Hill and Kelsey, and that's sort of how that one went. The thing about Baker Mayfield, two things. You sort of alluded to this, but just to sort of spell it out for people. So this is year four of his deal. Next year, they've extended the fifth year, yeah. Right? So next year he makes $19 million. This year he's making $920 in base salary, which is amazing. This is kind of the window. Like, you don't have to pay Baker Mayfield the big contract just yet. Like, they're able to sort of beef up their roster and go for all these free agents. Like, at some point, you know, they're going to have to figure out what to do with Hunt, who they have on a bargain. They're going to have to figure out what to do with Chubb and extend him. You know, they can carry Odell Beckham's big cap number for now because of all of these other factors. So this is kind of their year to do it, which, like, might make Browns fans gulp a little bit. But, like, that is their huge competitive advantage this year. And you're right about Baker Mayfield. He is limited when you talk about the other great quarterbacks in the league. But they do have the best rushing attack in the league. And they have a great coach. They have a great scheme. Sometimes a great running attack, look at the Titans, right? Like, sometimes a great running attack could bail you out when you don't have a quarterback who's as good as everybody else. I don't know. They could. I agree with Kelsey. I think they're right in the mix this year.
Which is a lot for Browns fans to deal with, that probably, right? Like, you haven't had this in a long time. But I think the Browns team is ready for this. I think they're ready for this opportunity, though. I don't think this is one of those things where we're overhyping a team that hasn't been there in a long time. I think they've earned this opportunity, and they expect to be there at the end of the season playing, you know, in Kansas City, presumably. We're just going off, you know, kind of team records and you know, what people over-unders, and having a good opportunity to stay with the Chiefs. Now, remember, last year's game, though, you know, Mahomes did get hurt in that game. But to be fair, the Browns, you know, they score at the end of the first half and not fumble at the back of the end zone. The game's different, too.
Yeah, totally. But it's interesting, Jeff. I mean, with the other teams, the AFC, and I'm curious if you think there's anybody else who belongs in this list. You've got Buffalo, we have every reason to think that they belong in this conversation. Like, you already mentioned them. They could easily run it back. They could easily be a team that's neck and neck with the Chiefs as well. We already talked about the Browns, but then the rest of the conference really does feel wide open to me, right? Like, we talked a lot about Tennessee last week. Baltimore is one of those teams where, like, I can't tell if they're underrated or way overrated. Like, they definitely seem like they could be in the mix, but so much of it depends on what kind of Lamar you're getting. Pittsburgh, everybody's fallen asleep on, of course. But then after that, it's like all these question mark teams, like the Chargers and the Patriots, the Broncos even some are saying, like, might belong in this mix. Do you see anybody who belongs, I guess, in the conversation for contenders with the Chiefs at this stage?
If the Ravens can improve their passing game, they have a chance. But I got to see it to believe it. I just, you know, got to see it to believe it. The Titans, I, you know, we talked about this last week. I don't feel any different about them after the Julio trade. You know, people say the Colts. Mm-hmm. I mean, the best Carson Wentz this year is average. We agree on that, going from the worst in the NFL to average this year and one year of improvement. They're not winning anything with the average quarterback. Phillip Rivers was just above average last year, just barely above average. Like, they're not winning. So, no, I think the AFC feels pretty much like a three-team race right now. Pittsburgh, look, man, when quarterbacks start going on their downward slide, Matt, they don't really go back up, buddy. Nothing with Pittsburgh. It's very clear Ben starting his end of his career. It's okay to say that. He's played a lot of football. I just can't imagine it just goes back up now.
I know. Well, at least they have Dwayne Haskins sitting there on the bench to take them to the promised land if need be. You mentioned you had something you wanted to add to this story.
It's not really this topic, but something that came up this week, and I don't know why it crossed my mind, but something that we've maybe not really talked about, but it feels more relevant now. So there's been a lot of talk about players being vaccinated or not vaccinated, right? And it's a pertinent question because of the protocols in place. I don't want to hear from players. I don't care if Montez Sweat or Sam. I wish they get vaccinated. I can't force it on anybody. And it's not, I don't care. I don't want to hear from them. But obviously, this is what we're talking about. Matt, do you think two things? Do you think there's going to be competitive advantage for teams with more players and staff vaccinated? Because remember, the NFL is going to have a different tier system, right? If you're not vaccinated, you're a coach. You can't be near the players. You can't be near the players.
Right.
If you're a player, daily testing, mask wearing, separated from your teammates, eating a different place. I think you have to, like, I think you probably have to fly a different plane. Like, all these things are different. I think to me, it's one thing that could be competitive advantage for a team.
I agree. And there was some GM, I want to say it was Brandon Bean, who said this exact thing about, I have to sort of look it up as we're talking, but there was one GM who said it is an advantage for the teams that get vaccinated more. But I'm more curious, like, you obviously were the player, but also, like, last year, we all thought there was going to be such a disconnect in terms of, you know, the lack of practice, no preseason, like no training camp, but everybody came out pretty crisp, or at least that's what it seemed like. I'm curious if, like, beyond the question of is there a competitive advantage, but also, like, were they doing practice wrong this whole time? Like, is there a way to sort of do things a little more remotely, a little more player friendly? Because if that's possible, you know, that's where things are going to head eventually.
It's a good question. But really, the good teams with veteran quarterbacks were good. I mean, like, there wasn't much of a surprise, right? Like, which team last year were you like, oh man, like they're just you're young and they've gone the grass of the Zoom meetings. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the teams that had the same components and veterans were good. I don't know if that matters. I know that players feel that they can practice less and get it done, and maybe they can. And they're obviously talking about doing that with off-season programs and whatnot. But I'm saying, like, for people that think and ask why people are talking about this, that's why. That's why. Because there's different levels of tiers in the NFL for the season. And if you're a player who's not vaccinated, again, your personal choice, your teammates who are vaccinated are going to have a much freer experience in the facility. Eat where they want to go, you know, hang out with each other, hang out in the meeting rooms, do all that stuff. And a unvaccinated player is not going to have that same leeway in the facility. And I wonder if the peer pressure that kind of not forces players, but they feel like they have to take the vaccine. Because it's going to be, maybe we're overblowing it, Matt, to your point. Maybe there is no advantage. But if one team has a herd immunity and one doesn't, the team that doesn't has more risk.
It's true. It's the risk, of course, and it's also, you said, it's the, you know, the penalties and, you know, the things that players won't be able to do. It's going to be interesting. And by the way, like, across the country, there's sort of this question of, like, well, to go back to the office, like, everybody's sort of having this own conversation in their own communities. I think the NFL benefits by the schedule sort of taking place in the fall, right? Like, this gives people a lot of time. They're going to have seen NBA players, MLB players kind of go through this and have to navigate their thresholds. Again, the sort of schedule allows the NFL to sort of experiment and take from the other leagues and see what worked and what didn't. COVID is going to be a thing in the NFL this year. It is something is going to happen with it, as the season kind of progresses. And, so it will be really
and
interesting.
And you look at last year, you can make the example of the Ravens right after Lamar came back from COVID. We're kind of just struggled for a little bit, right? Cam Newton came back, not the same player after COVID. We've heard Ezekiel Miles Garrett talk about his wind issues, right? He wasn't the same player. So yeah, it might not determine a Super Bowl. It might not determine who wins a division, but it could. And I don't know. I don't think I want to be the team that had a season derailed for COVID when there's ways to help prevent COVID in the facility.
I agree. Going back to the question of the practice and stuff, you asked, you know, was there anybody who came out of the gate hot that you were surprised about? Like, actually, there was. First of all, the first week of the season, I'm going to bring up the Chargers twice. The first week of the season, I was huge on the Chargers, who played the Bengals because Joe Burrow got no preseason, nothing. And that game, I don't know if you remember, turned out to be like a crazy missed field goal or something at the end.
16-13, Chargers won.
Yeah, it was a push, which really pissed me off. So that was one where I was like, I was ready to bet my house that you know, Joe Burrow wouldn't have a great start against a good defense, I think, on the road.
It was at home.
It was at Cincy. Okay, so, and well, they're the Chargers, so maybe don't read too much into that. But Justin Herbert, who got no training camp and then probably got no practice with the first team, came in and was fantastic, obviously. So I'm wondering if there's something to this or what you make of that now in hindsight.
Well, I think people underestimated Herbert, and I think that he's a special player, and special players are just kind of good at the beginning, right? The one thing this year...
Same with Burrow.
The one thing that this year that's going to be unique for Burrow and Herbert and Tua is they didn't play road games with fans last year. They're going to have... And I wonder if early in the season, there's a big adjustment period for young players who did not play in front of fans this past season.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, I think for someone like Burrow, who played in a national championship, that may, you know, who knows, but that is really interesting. Maybe even for players at a different position. I don't know. There's a lot of ways that can shake out.
Yeah. I mean, offensive line. So I'm curious how that, it might be minuscule, might be nothing, but I'm very curious about it.
This is for the NFL, man. There's so many things that affect the outcome of a game. It's why it's so fun and so hard to predict what's going to happen. Well, we've been going for a while. Do you want to do the contenders in the NFC, or should we save that for next week and just get to the last?
Let's save it for next week because we've had an AFC dominated show. Let's keep it that way. Sorry, NFC fans. And NFC, I think the NFC just takes, it's going to take a long time to talk NFC because who the hell knows?
Yeah, there's like 10 teams that could win that conference. It's pretty fun. So I guess, Jeff, we can move to our wild card topic here at the end, which is one you've insisted on bringing up, which is you must have something great to recommend to our folks.
I'm just curious because, like, this is the time of year when we stream. Like, I just need more ideas. I need people to send me ideas on what to stream right now. I've watched, like, every show imaginable, and I need something for my downtime right now. I need best shows to stream or movies in the summer. And it sparked my attention because The Office is just running nonstop on TBS right now. And you know, after it came off Netflix, I haven't watched very much of it because I'm not paying for Peacock for no reason. And I saw a friend, Joey Molinari, tweet about Shawshank Redemption being on last night at like 3 p.m., which is the most perfect it ever is on. But like, what are shows we should be streaming right now? I might just throw that out there for anybody. I don't know, Matt, do you know? You don't have kids. You have more time than I do.
I guess. I mean, I will. Let's maybe start with the football show. Are you a Last Chance U guy?
Yeah, I've seen all the Last Chances. I really liked them going to the junior college route. I felt like the coach was way more wholesome, especially in the basketball side. Both of them, right? Like, they actually like cared to be there and coach, and just weren't pricks to their kids about it.
Yeah, that show's great. I just watched Inside, the Bo Burnham comedy special this weekend, and that's. That blew my hair back. That's a fantastic watch. I'm curious if
is it the clip you sent me?
Have
oh, I gotta look up that. But yeah, this topic was not really talking about what show. I mean, look, I've watched all of them. I just need people to recommend shows to me so I can watch them this summer. That's it. I've seen like Sopranos, The Wire, Breaking Bad, The Office, Parks and Rec. I've seen like all of them. I watched them many times over. I don't know which show. I've seen The Office 15 times through. Sopranos. I've seen them all through. I just need some suggestions, folks. That's it.
Did you watch Mayor of Easttown, the new HBO show?
No, I heard. Is it good?
Very good. Highly recommend that one. That one's good. That show Hacks on HBO Max was really fun. It's not like the greatest show of all time, but it's a fun show. I like that.
I need to go watch one thing I do in every summer. A couple things. Band of Brothers gets watched through for some reason this summer. And secondly,
why?
I don't know. And secondly is I go back and watch the first season of Hard Knocks with the Ravens.
Ooh, Shannon
and
Sharp.
And Tony Siragusa. Yep. Matt, that was like 2001, bro. The things they say on that show are not allowed to be said anymore on television. It is, it was 20 years ago. Like the stuff they, it's unbelievable. I go back on YouTube and watch those. That's how what I spend my summers doing. Rewatching Hard Knocks episodes because I'm such a goof. I love football so much. I'd have to watch old football because I just can't get enough of it.
I used to live in the Baltimore area, and I once was at a restaurant where Tony Siragusa walked in about 2000, 2001, where the Ravens were hugely popular in the area. But it was like, I don't know, just like a suburban, like pizza place, whatever. And he walked in and no one really cared. Like he just, you know, whatever. If someone might've said hi, but he was waiting for his pizzas for a long time and no one was doing anything. And he was like, why is no one paying attention to me? I'm 350 pounds and hilarious. Like what's going on here? So he turned his car alarm on in the parking lot just to see if like it would make anyone pay attention to him. And everyone was like, what the hell is going on? He just left his car alarm going for like 5 minutes. And then he walks out of there with four giant large pizzas, Jeff. And as he walks out, he turns around and he goes, they're all for me. And walks into his car and drives away.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh my God. He's my Tony Siragusa story. So fat. So fat. What's the fattest meal you've ever had in your life?
In my life? Yeah, like, does our meal in Barcelona count? Or you and I shared half of a suckling pig?
After we had like eight other tacos? No, what is like your, like, you have a meal where you're like, this is the fattest thing I've ever had.
Have you ever been to Peter Luger's in New York City?
Been to what?
Peter Luger's in New York City. I know our producer Nick's nodding.
You want to hear I got a great Peter Luger story though. So we were going to Israel. Okay. We were flying from Charlotte to Newark, Newark to Turkey and then to Israel. So we had a 4-hour layover in New York City and wanted to get, we're going to get a dinner. And my wife was like, how about that steakhouse? You know, that like famous one. It's like Peter Luger shows. Yeah. I'm like, hun, they're booked 3 months out. We're not just getting in. And so she goes, no. I'll make it happen. I was like, whatever you say. So we like land in New York City and she calls Peter Luger and she's like, hey hun, I got some reservation for like 30 minutes. Let's go. I'm like, no, you didn't. What are you talking about? So we drive to Peter Luger in Brooklyn. We walk in and Mara's like, yeah, like, oh, Snipes for two. And he's like, yeah, I don't have Snipes for two. She called the one in Long Island instead.
Oh, man. That's too bad.
I've never had Peter Luger before. You had an entire steak, I imagine?
I mean, you could just eat a ton there. The desserts, and there's bacon that's like this thick. That's probably the most disgusting I've ever felt in my life. But do you have something queued up here?
I mean, I've had like 100 pieces of sushi before at like all you can eat sushi restaurant. Is that a lot?
That feels like maybe it's kind of a lot.
My brother and I were out one time at a Mexican restaurant, Don Antonio's on Pico, and like Pico and Bundy, I think it's right there. And we both ordered the fajitas for two. And the guy asked me first, like, what do you want? I said, I want the fajitas for two. And I started to walk away and we were like, no, sir. And my brother said, I want the fajitas for two. He goes, you guys want two fajitas for two? We're like, yes, we do.
Yeah, look at us.
So, Lobiel, the story is, guys, send me at Jeff Schwartz, or even Matt too. It's what, at Matt MM410?
Yep.
Send that's right. Matt and I suggestions for summer watches. That's why I put this topic in here. I just need some suggestions. I need something to watch while football cranks back up in the next couple of months. I mean, I'm telling you, college football is coming soon, buddy. Like, media days are in a month from now. Ugh, I cannot wait.
We have 12 weeks and 2 days till the Thursday night football game with the Bucks and Cowboys in week one.
Bro,
12
weeks out. We can do 10 it. We have 10 weeks till the first college football game, August 28th. The first weekend, week zero.
Week zero, man. Can't wait. We're getting close.
Hawaii at UCLA.
I'm excited that we can finally start to talk about over-unders and all that.
We'll get into
stuff.
All that, by the way. We'll get into over-unders. We'll get our favorite season win totals. One thing we're going to do this year, Matt, I think better, is we're going to hit some props. Like, we got to get in, like, not the Super Contest show. We can do that as part of it. But, like, preseason props. We got to be better at that. I'm not very good at that. That's my goal to you is to be better at that. I can only tell you, like, Saquon Barkley under. Just hammer it. Just be done with it.
It'll be my third year in a row. Let's get out of here.
All right, guys. Have a good one. Talk to you guys next week. Remember, at Jeff Schwartz, at MM410. Suggestions for shows and movies to watch. Peace, everybody.